a tiny country next to the Persian Gulf with over a million residents. Bahrain is, however, one of the most strategically important allies of the United States and Saudi Arabia. And that alliance has been affecting the course of a year-old revolutionary movement that's pitted the Al Khalifa regime against the nation that gets angrier every day. This is News Analysis.
Bahrainis mourn another victim of the brutal regime crackdown on their uprising against the Al Khalifa dynasty. The victim, a 59-year-old woman, died of tear gas inhalation fired by regime forces and the protesters. The toxin is made and supplied by the U.S. Bahrainis have also held protests against the desecration of the mosques by the regime forces in the town of Diraz. The violent stranglehold on the uprisings rages on, months after the Bahraini monarch King Hamad promised reforms and probes into human rights violations by his henchmen. More people have been killed since the reforms were announced.
The ruling family is unable to do anything positive. So all in all, the people are aware today that they cannot achieve anything positive in terms of political reform, social justice, end of human rights abuses.
The Bahraini people, however, have not relinquished their demand for an end to the British-founded Al Khalifa dynasty.
Just on March the 9th, a couple of weeks ago, we had the biggest political demonstration in Bahrain's history. Between, you know, we don't know exactly, but between 250,000 and 400,000 people came out onto the streets that day to demand democracy. So you're absolutely right. They are not going away. They're continuing to come out on the streets, and they're continuing to be met with a very brutal crackdown.
Here in Bahrain, we have a genuine nonviolent democracy movement. It's not clouded by issues of civil war, outside provocateurs. It is a movement that represents clearly the majority of the Bahraini people.
The Bahrainis have paid dearly for their revolution. Scores of people have been killed since the uprising began in mid-February 2011. Almost 30 people have been killed in 2012 alone. Large numbers of people have been incarcerated for little more than taking part in the peaceful protests. Many of the detainees have been professionals, like physicians, whose only crime had been to treat those injured by the Saudi-backed regime forces. A large number have also been sacked from their work. And the crackdown has just not abated. All this is happening right under the nose of the U.S. and its Western allies, who have chosen to turn a blind eye to the dire humanitarian situation developing in Bahrain. The kingdom is a key U.S. ally in the Persian Gulf and home to the U.S. Fifth Fleet in the region.
Well, joining me now live from Austin is a former assistant professor of the University of Bahrain, Mr. Colin Cavill. Thank you very much for being with us. Also with us live from Beirut, political analyst Mr. Hayyan Haidar. And joining us via Skype from London, Middle East consultant Mr. Peter Eyre. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. My first question going to Mr. Cavill in Austin. Mr. Cavill, some 80 people have been killed since the revolution began over a year ago, which is a high number when we consider Bahrain's population, over a million people, and almost 30 of the victims were killed just this year. Does this mean, do you think, that the regime has decided a violent crackdown is the only way to quell these protests?
Yes, Omar. The regime has responded to democratic, nonviolent demands with vicious violence, with torture, with jailings, with murder. And this opposition, this uprising in Bahrain, is percentage-wise the largest uprising in the entire Arab world. Three-quarters of the population were out on the streets on March, just as recently as March 9th. Nonviolent uprising. Everything the U.S. has asked for in order to support such uprisings, and yet they are betraying the Bahraini revolution. They are betraying this demand for democracy. They are betraying this demand to eliminate, to get rid of a 229-year-old monarchy that has no legitimacy.
Right. I'd like to come back to something you pointed out there, and that's the influence that the United States, as well as Saudi Arabia as well, is having in the situation there. But first, Peter Eyre in London, do you agree it is a catch-22 situation in Bahrain, people becoming angrier, more determined, more radical as the ruling family continues to move on with this crackdown and to kill more people?
Yes, I do, actually, and it's quite interesting. The previous gentleman passed comment about three-quarters of the population taking to the streets. I might add that three-quarters of the population are almost Shiites, and, of course, the government definitely do not want the Shiites to have any part in the government of Bahrain. They are very small minority in government. Their chances of employment is almost zero. And so there's a very good reason for them taking to the streets. What I find remarkable is that, once again, when the Arab League and the West take sides with people like the regime in Libya or whatever, and in the case of Egypt, with user-friendly leaders, when they go past their use-by date, they then discard them and put another puppet government in. In this case, there is no chance that the royal family is going to be removed because the contracts, as in Saudi, as in Bahrain, who are very close allies, have passed tremendous amounts of money on government and defense contracts to the West.
Mr. Hayyan Haidar, let's get your view on this as well. First of all, looking at the situation in Bahrain, Mr. Eyre just telling us that he thinks there's no way that the Al Khalifas are going to go away or are going to relinquish power. At the current circumstances, however, do you think that dialogue is going to work?
Well, we've been witnessing what's going on in Bahrain for the whole year now. And as our colleagues on the air have said, both of them, there are no signs that the real dialogue is starting up. And I mean, we have, they said about 400,000 or three quarter of the population. This is more than three times the percentage of the Egyptian people, for instance, who came out to topple the regime a year ago. So still there is no reaction, and we have to really stress on the point that until now it's a peaceful demonstrations going on every day, every week, every Friday, and it's building up in tens of thousands and sometimes hundreds of thousands on there. And still the regime is very well backed, it seems, with the militarily, let's say, with the Gulf forces and Saudi Arabia. And I think it's a bit hypocritical. I have to say this is a very blatant case of using double standards. I mean, we have one of the largest U.S. bases sitting on this island and across the Gulf, and they don't see this discrepancy, if you can call it. I mean, this ruling family has been there since the 1978 or so, and I think they have a very, very special case,
right,
which is which should be mentioned to the Guinness Book. I mean, the Prime Minister has been over there for 40 years, longer than the king. I mean, we've never seen that a prime minister sits on the
right,
on his cabinet for a time longer than the actual ruler there. And finally, I just wanted to say that when this started, we could see all Bahrainis on the streets, that is Sunnis and Shias and everybody else. And unfortunately, now it's been all of it treated and seen as if it is a Shia uprising against the Sunni rulers.
Right. What you say, Mr. Haidar, when you are speaking about the Bahraini regime, is that you believe that dialogue is not possible because the regime is not willing to engage in dialogue. Mr. Cavill, I'd like to put this next question to you. Do you think that the Bahraini regime is quite independently making that decision not to engage in dialogue? Or, as some observers have been saying, the Bahraini regime is actually getting orders from Riyadh or from its allies and not to engage in dialogue? dialogue because they deem it not worthwhile at this point in time. What do you think?
Well, Omar, I do believe that since Bahrain is a mere satrapy or appendage of Saudi Arabia, that they are taking their orders directly from the King of Saudi Arabia. However, they would not be doing this without the support and encouragement of the United States. The State Department, U.S. State Department, believes that this opposition, this uprising, can be quelled, that the opposition will go away. But they are wrong. They are dead wrong. They have been proven wrong throughout the past year. And right now, the opposition is trying to decide what tactics they should utilize. And you got some who are saying, well, maybe we should compromise with the regime. And the regime willingly would like to buy that part off. There are others who say, well, perhaps we need violence. Perhaps we should pick up guns. For example, last night I heard the famous journalist Seymour Hersh speak at the University of Texas at Austin. And I asked him about Bahrain, to speak about how the U.S. is controlling the entire region from Bahrain with its Fifth Fleet base there. And he laughed and he said, well, unfortunately, the opposition will lose in Bahrain because the big boys have all the guns. So this is an attitude of how some Western journalists and others are looking at this massive uprising in Bahrain. But I want to suggest, Omar, that there may be another option, and that is a labor strike. If you have 3/4 of the population withhold their labor from this regime for a week, it would collapse. And they can do it gradually. They can start one day at a time until people get into knowing how to do a labor strike, but then have everybody do a complete labor strike and right. Block the highways, just like they did on February 14th.
Mm. Peter Eyre, when we are speaking about the support that the Bahraini regime, the Al Khalifas, have been getting from the United States, Saudi Arabia, and from Britain as well, we saw the visits taking place between the two sides at the midst of the revolution and while the human rights violations were taking place. What kind of a solution do you think Bahrain's allies, including the U.S. and the U.K., are looking for when it comes to Bahrain? Are they willing to ask the rulers to relinquish parts of their power?
That's a very difficult question because, again, I have to refer to other previous regimes in other areas. For instance, obviously, the regime in Bahrain is a puppet to the West and to Saudi. We have the same situation or had the same situation with Mubarak in Egypt. But when the tide turned against him, the West realized that he'd got to be removed from office, and now they're still in limbo waiting for a Western-friendly leader, which has not come into fruition. We saw the same with Saleh in Yemen, who was put there and supported again by the West, and he's now fallen from grace, and still no democracy in Yemen, and we have no democracy in Bahrain. It is now 1 year on, as our gentleman said, in Beirut. And I believe a year ago, there was a very similar situation occurred where someone died as a result of tear gas. You know, this is 1 year on, no change. Where is the Arab League in all this? They take sides when they're backing up the West against people like in Libya and Syria, etc. But when it comes to Bahrain, they just close their ears and close their eyes. There is a very large American base there. Why isn't something happening? It's quite obvious why, because there is no one to replace the regime at the moment.
Hmm. And Mr. Haidar, looking at Riyaz's intentions here as well, a lot has been said about how the internal situation in Saudi Arabia is affecting its policy in the region, including towards Bahrain. We're seeing protests taking place in Saudi Arabia. People, they're asking the regime there to get their forces, their military forces, out of neighboring Bahrain. So how do you think Riyaz's domestic problems are influencing its policies towards Bahrain?
Well, I think it's very much linked together. First of all, it's very obvious that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia is not ready to see one of the kingdoms or emirates fall you know, to a revolution, because this will mean the whole area will be jeopardized by the same kind of opposition or movement. But I really admire the protesters in Bahrain for sitting for a whole year despite of everything that happened, and they are still walking peacefully and demanding for reforms and this. I remember that at the beginning they just wanted minor reforms, you know, very basic constitutional reforms. Now, of course, things are developing. But we've heard that today there were some protests in Saudi Arabia in the eastern parts, and there were violence also and killings. So it's just started, and I hope it doesn't. The people don't really start with the violent protests right. all over the place. But I would like just to comment on our colleagues. He was asking, where is the Arab League in all of this? And this is very right. I would just comment and say, for 20 years, we haven't seen the Arab League speak up for Palestine. So I'm not surprised they are not taking things here again. We have double and more than double standards being applied all over the place, and the cases of Libya, Yemen, and Syria are very clear, you know, what's happening.
Right.
And despite
speaking of double standards,
organizations like...
Yeah, Mr. Haider, sort of jumping in. Speaking of double standards, that brings the next question on, and that's the question is about the United Nations. Mr. Cavill, let's speak about the kind of international attention that's been put on the case of Bahrain. We're seeing reports of poisonous tear gas killing a lot of protesters in Bahrain, and other reports are telling us that this poisonous tear gas has been supplied by the United States. However, no international action, no United Nations actions, while human rights violations, including torture and arbitrary arrests, are taking place. So basically, where does the UN stand in this? Is it incapable of now of playing a humanitarian role in the case of Bahrain, at least?
Excellent question, Homar. It raises another question, which is, how independent is the United Nations? Do they have to be quiet until the United States gives its approval on anything? And that is what the world has seen. The United States is being hypocritical, especially in Bahrain. And the opposition, the democratic opposition, three-quarters of the population, are asking themselves, are you saying, the United States, that you don't respect our revolution unless we pick up guns? Are you agreeing with Mao Zedong that political power comes out of the barrel of a gun? You told us for years, peaceful opposition you will respect, and yet you are betraying us. You are not recognizing our demands at all. You're supporting a 18th century monarchy, a 229-year-old outmoded form of government.
Right, and I just
so
want to...
So what do you want the opposition to do?
Yeah, and I just want to get all of you gentlemen's views on the fate of the Bahraini revolution before we run out of time, starting with Peter Eyre. Peter, you say that the Bahraini regime is not going to go down, it's going to stay in power. What do you think will happen with the Bahraini revolutionary movement? What will be its fate at the current circumstances when it's not getting the international attention it wants? What's going to happen?
Well, I think, as we can see from today, it's 1 year on and many people are out on the street. I think the magnitude of the people will eventually force a certain amount of pressure on the government and on the West attitude towards Bahrain. But I'm afraid that we're probably likely to see a lot more deaths before it gets anywhere to a humanitarian level, if you can put it that way, before intervention takes place, if there is intervention. But the UN is a puppet of the US. They're all working together. So at the moment, it will come to nothing.
Right. And Mr. Haider, your view on this as well. First of all, who do you think does have the upper hand in the battle between the Al Khalifa regime and the protesters now?
Well, I think that... As we said, we have more than half the population, maybe three quarter, as our colleague said, and also the idea of a general strike or a strike which catches up and becomes bigger and bigger and wider is one of the ideas that could come into execution soon. And I'm sure that any kind of revolution or uprising or of this magnitude, which we are seeing for a whole year now, will come up with other ways of expressing themselves and trying to bring down the regime. And I'm afraid it will have to come to violence later on. Mm. I hope that somebody brings them to reason into negotiating a good outcome. And I feel that we can still get out of it with the constitutional kingdom, as was asked for a year ago, and with a good constitution and free elections, etc. And the regime can still do it, but I'm afraid they are not free, as our colleagues said. I mean,
I'd just like to stop you there, if I may, Mr. Haidar, because we're running out of time. The last comments to our guest in Austin, Mr. Cavill, do you think that there's going to be regime change and that would only quell the protests, or do you think that political reforms are possible, that constitutional monarchy is going to work here?
Omar, Mr. Peter Eyre is correct that the United Nations is not going to help the Bahraini opposition. Other countries are not helping the Bahraini opposition with arms or any type of instigation. It will be up to the Bahraini opposition to make this revolution successful. And as Mr. Haidar said, it may come to violence at some point. And this is what the United States State Department is pushing the Bahraini opposition into. They're saying, we don't respect your uprising unless you use violence. But I think the Bahraini opposition has a choice here. They can either use violence,
right,
and that way it will be a very bloody situation, or a labor strike, which
Cowell,
I think would
thank
be
you.
Something that could be very effective.
Thank you very much. I'm afraid we've run out of time. A big thank you there to Mr. Colin Cavill, former assistant professor of the University of Bahrain, joining us from Austin, political analyst Mr. Hayyan Haidar from Beirut, and Middle East consultant Peter Eyre joining us via Skype from London. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us, and thank you, viewers, for staying with News Analysis. It's goodbye for now.